Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRue Show for Saturday, August 28th, 2010. I'm Marcia Mary Baker. And our topic for today is NWAPA is bigger than Texas. Fully employ our nation and workforce on developing the biosphere. So that catchy title, I won't even say Alaska's twice as big as Texas, sorry. But it's part of the reason for that title, it has many reasons, is we're very glad to have LaRouche Political Action Committee activists from Houston, Texas, on with us today. Memo Granados, welcome.
Thank you.
Memo has been very active in both the NWAPA outreach in this key part of the continent and related to Mexico for what this program means. And also, I think Hour by Hour is part of the Keisha Rogers for Congress campaign, all of it being part of the same thing and very hot. So we'll hear more about that in just a very few minutes. And also live with me in the studio, I'm glad to have Paul Gallagher with us. Hi, Paul.
Hi, glad to be here.
And people know him as host of the show sometimes and with economics in the with EIR News Service. And I just want to say he's writing up right now, which will be for EIR Online this coming week, a picture of the full dimensions of the breakdown of the nation in terms of the disemployment of the workforce, the complete misemployment, unemployment. And he's not starting, he'll be talking about this in the show, but we want to blow away a lot of the statistical crap you hear from Joe Biden, from Obama himself, from the Bureau of Labor Statistics in the Obama administration. As I think Rachel Brown said in a campaign event in Boston this week, there's so much massaging of statistics by the Obama administration that it's even bigger massaging than Al Gore gets. So she said it better, and it was funny, and everybody laughed. But this, I'm just raising this, the question of the nation, the breakdown of the nation, because that is what the process that's underway, not some double dip depression or recession or jobless, homeless, foodless situation, but the breakdown of a nation and breakdown of nation states. So that's the vantage point of our discussion today. Will our nation and our planet survive? And that will be through development. It won't be anything less than that. And that's the vantage point of the emergency measures that Mr. LaRouche himself, the LaRouche Political Action Committee, and collaborators in the United States and around the world are working for. And it isn't, it's very, really there's a shift going on. And to recap, you know, we're talking about the necessity to have an end to the casino economy monetary system that's completely blown out already so that you can have stability and credit for the existence of people. That is, you can go ahead and launch what ought to have been going on for decades, namely this project on our own continent of the North American Water and Power Alliance. And this means getting Mr. Obama out of the way. He's still up there vacationing somewhere in those polluted waters off of Cape Cod. But it would be good if he resigned himself. But I'll just say that it was just barely a week ago, August 22nd, when this animated video map of the functioning of the North American Water and Power Lines was put out by the LPAC Basement Research Team. And the response to that has been dynamite. I want to just say there are many things, those of you who look for the daily video on the LaRouchePAC.com can see in terms of, you certainly, I hope, have already looked at, if not, look at the NWAPA map I just mentioned. But the further discussion is going on there, too. You can see Sky Shields interviewed on how green plants hate solar cells. That's about 45 minutes discussion of the biospheric effects that we can have by intervening to improve nature. That's what nature expects of us. That is nature. And there is a tremendous mustering of expertise going on of those echelons of skilled engineers and others. And the whole prospect of 3 to 4 million jobs starting fast is just, as I said, it's a dynamite reaction. Now, people are saying, count me in, you know, where, when and where. Now, the three candidacies that are in the forefront of all of this, Summer Shields is pretty much Mr. Nawapa out there, and he's just put a new statement out, but running against Nancy Pelosi out in San Francisco. You can see more about that. But Rachel Brown, I just mentioned, in Boston, who just completely routed in a candidate's a debate in Middle... Well, it wasn't a debate. It was candidate's appearance in Middleborough before 200 veterans-related people on Wednesday night in Massachusetts. You definitely want to see that on an off the relevant off-the-cuff the next morning, because Barney Frank spoke and then pretty much had to disappear. Go ahead, Paul.
No.
That's just
because, I saw it.
Okay.
I saw it.
Anyway.
Frankly, it's a disaster for Barney. It's really worth watching.
And he's the one who tried to insult her out of existence, remember, months and months ago, that then went around the world in a public confrontation there. He's not only had to set up offices, show up at candidates' nights, but he has said that this Tuesday night, August 31st, he will tape a video debate with Rachel Brown. He's been trying to avoid that and avoid that. The election, you know, is September 14th that we're talking about here. As long as this debate has no people involved, it's private in a TV studio, no studio, and we'll see if it happens. And we can enjoy her wiping the floor again with him another time. So what we want to do today is start directly with a memo's firsthand report from Texas of really this breakout in all respects of the Keisha Rogers campaign, the Nawapa response among the population. Go right ahead, please.
It's been really exciting to see the tremendous response we've been getting from the population on with Keisha's campaign. I mean, the kind of responses we're getting are people are looking for big ideas, and that is something which they're responding to. They're not responding to a practical campaign. They're not responding to any kind of slogan or pitch which corresponds to their immediate satisfaction. They look at what's happening. They know, first of all, they want Obama out. People are fed up with Obama, and they want him out. But what they're responding to, and this is where the Nawapa initiative has become very significant, in that right, they want Obama out. They know the whole thing is collapsing. They know the system's finished. You don't have to really twist their arms or convince them. They know the whole financial economic system has blown out, that it's all a big joke. And what they respond to in terms of a solution is typified by what the Nawapa project represents. And the kind of responses, I'll go through a little bit of the details, whether it's a campus deployment with the youth going to schools, and the responses that we've been getting from the youth on the campuses in terms of the role that they could play in something like an infrastructure project of this magnitude. And the outreach to the engineers, to the scientific community, I mean, it's been all very, it's been very exciting. I mean, people are responding in a very excited way. And the thing is that really they're looking for, we're positioned in a way to be able to inspire the imagination. And that really has become a huge political weapon, we're becoming a very tremendous political force of people wanting to back up our campaign and wanting to get involved with Keisha in any way possible. One example of how we've been able to inspire the imagination of the population is, for example, the candidate herself, Keisha. We had an event on a campus. It was Thursday night. We had a town hall meeting at a campus in her district. And Keisha was going through how you know, she in a sense kind of challenged people's imagination in the beginning by saying, you know, get your take your imagination out of, you know, kind of zoom out, if you will, zoom out of Houston, out of Texas, you know, even beyond Texas, you know, you start zooming out far enough where you get out of the planet and, you know, you go far enough, you get to the moon, but then you're looking into the planet, and what you're seeing at the moment is immense poverty. You know, you're looking at it from the perspective of a global, you got the whole globe, you have a global perspective. You're looking at poverty. You're looking at disease. You're looking at crimes. You're looking at people suffering. You're looking at, you know, she even mentioned you're looking at the printing of money. You're seeing that there is a process that at the same time you have all this going on. You have a breakdown of society. You have a breakdown of physical economy, the physical economy, and yet you also simultaneously have the printing of money occurring at the same time. And then she then went through a little bit of what we're doing with our outreach, with the calling, with the outreach to the NASA employees, with the scientific community out here, with the engineers. And towards the end of the discussion, she finished by saying that what is possible I should mention there was a presentation given by Frankie, one of the campaign volunteers, on the NOAAPA, and he went through a little bit more on the specifics of what the project would include and, you know, some of the more technical aspects and a little bit more of the details. But then Keisha came back up, and she then challenged people again to imagine the NOAAPA project implemented, and then imagine all the other infrastructure projects implemented, and that you would have to step back far enough away from the planet, say get to the moon, to be able to look at the unity of effect that all these various infrastructure projects would be having globally. You would be seeing a space, someone in the audience, by the way, was very involved. The audience was just very engaged. Not only were they just listening passively, not only were they concentrated throughout the, you know, they were paying attention throughout the whole thing, but they were very on board with what Keisha presented. You know, at the end, she was saying that if you look at, if you even take the, even if you think about the next 3-4 generations, that when Mars gets colonized, you'd look back at Earth and say, okay, well, that's, look at all the things that are going on planet Earth. There's high-speed rail systems. There's a connection of high-speed rail systems throughout the planet. There's nuclear power plant. The Sahara Desert is now green. You know, we have a space program in Africa. The Great Western Desert here in the United States is no longer brown. It's green. And, you know, that's something that really inspires people. I think it inspires the imagination of the constituents, and then also it inspires them in a way in which they know that these things are feasible, that they are possible, but then it also moves them to want to become a part of the organizing for these kinds of projects. And one example of that is a union member, one of the union leaders who was there in at that meeting, and he had come to another meeting before at our weekly coffee Oasis meeting on the same subject of NOAAPA. And he is someone that after that meeting he just decided that he wants to now organize his union members, the leadership of that are in his, you know, his union leadership, but then also now he wants to start calling his buddies from other unions. And he's someone that is very interesting. He, you know, we sat down with him the day after the meeting, Keisha and I, and, you know, he was just strategizing with us about all the people that he wants to contact, all the people that he has at NASA that he's friends with. His father was someone who had worked with the TVA project. And so he really has a sense of the importance of these kinds of infrastructure initiatives, these kinds of projects. So he is trying to get his father to get involved now in coming back out of retirement. His father's 70-something, and he's trying to get his father back involved in organizing and also to maybe volunteer some of his networks and some of his resources to us so that they don't, you know, they get put to good use, which they certainly will. But we also have the idea that really has been also inspiring people is that you think about how you think about the idea of the real question of what really is human immortality, what really is the meaning of human life, what really is the meaning of human existence, what's the purpose of society, what's the meaning of all this, and these kinds of big questions are things in which the NWAPA project really begins to address from that standpoint. And it's really not a it's really in a way in which and people respond to it. Those are the kinds of questions, the big questions with and the big solutions like NWAPA and the big ideas where you get people to imagine a society living on Mars and having a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old looking out their windows and looking at the planet, you know, looking maybe with a telescope or something, but looking at Earth and then saying, wow, the reason why my family can live here, the reason why my mom and dad and my little brothers and, you know, my school teacher, the reason why my community is able to exist here is because 50, 100 years ago, there were human beings back at that on that planet that built that big thing called the NWAPA, and that they know that their existence on Mars is completely that human beings building the NWAPA and building these kinds of infrastructure projects, it was completely necessary for the future and for their existence on the planet Mars.
And then so having you get done people, it here, we could do it there.
Say again?
Once having done it here, we could then do it there, in other words.
Exactly, exactly. And so you start forcing people to imagine the possibilities, and you get them out of – you start breaking them out of their limitations and out of the limitations from of even just looking at things from a monetary standpoint. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, one young lady on the campus, I guess I can talk a little bit about the campus just to begin with, some of the responses we've been getting there. There's a young woman who was listening to what the effects of NWAPA would be and, you know, essentially what the project is. And then she was told by an organizer, well, you know, if we can bring life, if we can figure out this on Earth, figure out how to bring life to where there's little or no life, then that will then lead, sort of be the basis, and will give us insights on how to then take that idea and then figure out how to do it, say, on another planet like Mars. You figure out you get insights from having done it here where the conditions are more favorable, but yet we're still, you know, it still requires, the principle is still the same. Human beings can figure these problems out. We figure out how to do it here, and then that can encourage and unleash optimism of, okay, well, let's see where else we can figure, where else can we do it? What else can we do? And then you start looking at planets as if they were continents, and, you know, you start broadening the people's imagination and what is possible and their field of, the field of potential, what people can act on. And so the youth response has been tremendous on the campuses. We had, for example, just this week, the classes began. We had a gentleman, a young African American student, who's, you know, he was there first day of school, ran into us, and wanted to stuck around the table, talking to every single organizer, just hanging out. He ended up getting out of the campus to come with us to the intersection deployment, and then come back to our campaign headquarters, where we were going to have a music, you know, our music Tuesday, our usual Tuesday night music voice training. So he came to the intersection and then came back to the office to sing with us. And he was just totally inspired by everything. I mean, he's that's typical of the kind of responses we're getting, where we're telling young people, you don't have a future. Let's just give it up. You're coming to this school, and you know that this whole system is collapsing. You coming to school will make no difference. The only thing that will make a difference, and the only way your life will make a difference, is if you see yourself from this bigger standpoint of pushing the kinds of policies and pushing the kinds of ideas which will get society moving in the direction of progress, of productivity. And that's, I think, I mean, that's one case. We also have had different cases of some of our newer members, for example, some of the newer members of the campaign, like Rob, George, and a young woman named Miriam has been coming around. These are people that are a little, you know, 20, 21 years old, and they're going to these campuses, and they're talking to essentially people of the same age, and they're just, the newer members are just very sharp with the fact that we have a mission, and they want to, they're very fired up about getting other young people to adopt a similar mission, because that is truly where, you know, happiness, where you can find happiness. And so a lot of young people have been responding on the campus. It's been very tremendous. The intersection deployment that we had last night was also something which is worth reporting, so people know this was a phenomenal intersection deployment where we constantly had people pulling over by, I mean, we had just groups of people, different, like four cars, just all at the same time, just stopping by. We wanted to end our deployment by 6, but we couldn't. We had to go even beyond an hour of even more deployment at the intersection just because people just kept coming by. They just kept pulling over and wanting to talk to us.
This was in the district. Was it a very urban area or where you could pull over out in the suburbs?
This was this is a part of a industrial area. This is Deer Park. It's part of the district where you have it is suburban, but there's just a lot of industries there. There's a lot of blue collar labor, oil refineries. It's just a very dense area of blue collar labor, and they were pulling over and wanting to ask. They were pulling over because they saw the Hitler mustache on Obama, and they love it. They said, "Yes, let's get him out." But then they get presented with, "Well, this is the solution." They don't get presented with anything less than the fact that the whole economy is breaking down, and we know what to do about this collapse. Typical Nawapa being the driver, and so they don't get presented with any kind of, you know, Obama is so bad, and Obama, you know, did you hear the next thing on Obama? They already want this guy out. But we want to then, at that point, at that moment, inspire the imagination and give them a strong enough, substantial reason, which then they say, okay, yes. Why are we not building Nawapa? Why are we not going to Mars? Why are we not productive? Oh, because of this puppet, British puppet, because of this guy? And then they say, okay, we definitely have to get him out. We certainly will organize with you. We'll come to meetings. And we're getting these kinds of responses where people are saying, okay, I want to come to your meetings. I want to know more about this. I'll go on the website. We're always directing people to the LaRouche Pack interactive 3D map so that people can watch this thing for themselves and play around with it. And the Nawapa organizing itself, with the phone calls that have been made to the one thing that I could say about that is that there was – I had spoken earlier in the week to the senior hydrogeologist from a New Mexico State University, and he was someone who is actually familiar or knows or knew the technical program manager for the Parsons Company, Roland Kelly, who had given a presentation there on the Nawapa. And he immediately knew Nawapa, very familiar with the Nawapa, said even from, you know, the 60s. And he was very excited about it, very excited that we're bringing it, that we're, you know, we want to bring it back, but also have it be implemented very soon. And he was someone that just had a lot of excitement and just shared a lot of resources. I mean, this is someone who had a lot of experiences with working with federal and state agencies on the question of water. And he has networks of people, of similar people. And then we, you know, he, in a sense, was challenged with the question that, you know, we would call him if he would be someone to kind of begin to see himself as playing a role in a NOAAPA committee an advisory committee to the government, and that we want to build such a committee that is ready to move at any moment in order to play that role of advising on how this NOAAPA project would be carried out. And so similar to that kind of challenge and that kind of a role to play, there was another individual who was also excited about it near the Los Pecos River, who Ian and Jason had contacted. And he was someone that said he knows the area pretty well. I mean, he knows what's necessary. He knows the lack of employment that they have. I mean, he knows that there would have to be a massive employment would have to occur if that area would be developed. So employment would have to be brought in. He also knows of some of the problems with the water problems, the unemployment problems, the lack of power. I mean, he just really has a good sense of a real good sense of all the things that would be necessary in that part of the country. And so he would be someone that would more than happy. I mean, he seemed excited, according to the reports that I got, of seeing himself as playing that kind of a role in regards to what he knows in terms of that area. And so we're also going to be very soon, starting next week, doing a little bit more of a concentrated effort to get a hold of the scientists in NASA. And obviously, you know, we have that's always from the beginning, that was a big part of Keisha's campaign, to not only save NASA or save jobs in NASA, but to bring back a mission and to have NASA be mission oriented once again, not just simply to go back to the moon, but then even to set that sort of as a beginning phase for then a mission to colonize Mars. And that's also been something which we don't want to, you know, we want to make sure that we pretty much aggressive on the organizing for some of the scientists around NASA who could also be recruited to play a role in the NOAAPA committee, because in a real way they have the kind of report that I got on how, you know, some of the comments that Lynn had made recently, LaRouche, was that you want to look at the NOAAPA project as if you want to begin to think about it as if you were a space scientist, and you want to look at the whole project from space science. And, you know, in other words, you do want to look at these kinds of things from the highest level. You want to have a top-down approach and a top-down perspective, and that is science. The more we know and the more we develop understanding, then the more of a perspective you can have from a top-down view. And so those are a couple of exciting things in terms of the NOAAPA organizing, the kind of responses we're getting from the youth and the people in the whole district. Just the kind of responses we've been getting are definitely that people are ready to see these kinds of things implemented, and they're ready to have projects and to have these kinds of things at that level, at a very big level. Not anything less than that, it's not really resonating with them. And so it's also another reason why the way that we're getting the people's responses is that they also become even more aggressive in terms of saying, yeah, we have to get Obama out. And so that's just partly, that's just some of the organizing. I don't know if maybe anything specific or any other questions that you may have, but
well,
that's just the general picture.
I have met several questions, but you know what? If we could just take up your point where you stressed that a lot of workers, like the unionized worker, people connected to, I mean, they know the whole thing is falling apart. It isn't just my area doesn't have jobs. NASA, the moratorium on offshore oil drilling, and you can go to every region in the country. But people have a sixth sense. You don't have to tell me anything. I know. And I'd like Paul to just say, to at this point, just say something about the dimensions of the real breakdown of the country's employment. You might even say there were demonstrations this week of a mass nature at job fairs.
There were, yeah. There were many. Obviously, there were at least three or four that I know about that I found out about directly or talked to people involved. That one was in Southfield, Michigan. One was in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Another was in Atlanta. These were big ones with thousands of people attending the job fairs. And interestingly, the one in, or not so interesting, tragically, the one in Southfield, Michigan was for people over 50. And 5,000 people turned out to it. And they were looking basically for anything, any kind of work. You know, there were some decent jobs there, some few. But they were looking for anything, you know, and the kind of employers who dominated all these fairs are retailers, Walmart and many, many other retailers. It's ironic, the kind of work that we used to associate, we have always associated with the first job of a teenager, is now the kind of work that people over 50 are trying to get, which means, of course, that teenagers and people in of college age in the early 20s are not getting them at all. If I just looked at the last 10 years, for people in the workforce who should be in the workforce, in the working age population, who are not institutionalized in any way. They're not in hospitals. They're not sick. They're not in college. They're not in the military. They're ready to work. There had been an increase of 6.5 million such people between the ages of 16 and 24.
Over the last decade.
Yeah, over the last decade. The youngest cohort of that ready to work population. And the number of them not working out of the workforce had grown by 6.5 million, the same amount. If you extend this up through from 16 to 65, you get practically the same situation, same picture in the last 10 years. The overwhelming majority, 95% of the numbers of people who have entered the ready-to-work population in the United States between 16 and 65 in the last 10 years, have failed to find work, have left the workforce, and have simply reflected the increasing numbers of really unemployed people. I mean, we should forget all these various categories. The government's Bureau of Labor Statistics has six different categories of unemployment themselves, six different measures of the unemployment rate. Forget them and look at the at what has happened to the population. See, when I look, and everybody should look at the our LPAC website and this really inspiring and thought-provoking video or set of videos, interactive videos on the North American Water and Power Alliance, which when you see them, it's as if you're traveling at a small plane height over this entire vast area from Alaska down through Mexico, the entire western half of North America. And you're looking at the mapping of all of the lifts, the reservoirs, the canals, the tunnels, the tremendous pumping facilities, the dams, the hydroelectric and nuclear facilities, all of them that are going to be built, in watering this whole vast, huge area and greening it. And you can't watch those videos without thinking of, without seeing in your mind's eye, tens and tens of thousands of scientists, engineers, machine tool people working at these main sites, and hundreds of thousands of people working on the construction of the tunnels, the canals, the vast grid of water management that's involved in building the Nuapa, as if you were looking at the human race, as Memo was saying, as if you were looking at the human race building an infrastructure for life on Mars. You can see it in your mind's eye, and it's in the many, many hundreds of thousands. Lyndon LaRouche has estimated, who's directing this work, 3 to 4 million. And you can see also from these videos, this is completely planned, this North American Water and Power Alliance and associated building. The design elements of it have been around for many, many years. Our basement team of the LaRouche Youth Movement has completely fleshed it out so that you can see that this could be done immediately. This could be happening tomorrow. Get rid of Obama, reorganize the banks in order to put credit into this kind of expenditure, and this could be happening tomorrow, and there would be those many hundreds of thousands of construction employees and the engineers, the scientists. Then when you look at the workforce, its actual condition, such a president beginning to drive this kind of process will have to be looking at a horizon of 5 to 10 years in which he or she is going to direct instigate the creation of tens of millions of largely productive jobs. Obviously, many services around this also, but tens of millions of jobs, because that is the number of people ready to work of working age in the United States who have literally disappeared from the labor force over the period of the last 10 years in particular. I could give you one example. If you take the increase in the size of that population, 16 to 65, which is civilian, not in the armed services, although, of course, the armed services are vital to such work, but they're only a million or so. If you take that civilian population, which is between those ages and is not institutionalized and is ready to work, it's increased by more than 25 million in the last 10 years. The workforce itself has increased by less than 5 million in the same period of time.
So the whole thing is talk about entropy, dying off, killing off the ability to continue to exist.
Absolutely. And you know, this is what thoroughly drives the mass strike anger in the American population at this point. Obviously, everybody knows the statistics. Everybody writes about them, the foreclosures, the impoverishment, the food stamps. But the most fundamental thing can't find work. The most fundamental thing, which it breaks down and frustrates and infuriates the personality of the human being involved, can't find work. There isn't, and the workforce is just shrinking. And those, you know, that's really the dynamism of this thing. And LaRouche's approach, don't worry about this, don't obsess about it and demoralize people with it. Start immediately. 3 to 4 million people at a high level of skill can be employed on the Nuapa and associated work. By that I mean, and he means, scientists, engineers, skilled machinists, before you even get into just a large amount of construction, basic construction that's going to be done on this, 3 to 4 million people, and starting immediately. And that's the key to it. And part of the excitement, I think, is we've talked to a lot of people. I've talked to some people who are involved in trying to train younger workers or returning veterans who are also relatively younger workers, trying to train them for getting into this job market, which has collapsed thoroughly. There must be a way in, and so they're training people, and they just experience total frustration. In, you know, this one union, the machinist union, has seen its the place in the country where they probably had the most dense concentration of skilled machinists and engineers working on aerodynamics, working on machinery, working on development of machinery, that is aircraft industry around Wichita, cut in half, in not in 10 years, but in three, employment cut in half, and their whole union young worker training program, which they had just been launching, terminated.
Yeah, by the way, so you could, you might, Memo might be interested in so forth. It's called, is that the helmets to?
No, that's not that. This this was that particular union's program. They just couldn't do it. The Department of Defense is funding this other one. You're referring to helmets to hard hats for Gulf era war veterans, meaning the last 20 years, war veterans training as the various skills of various construction trades. 200,000 people they've trained in the last 6 years since this thing got launched. It's got DOD money. It's got stimulus money. It's able to do these things. 200,000 people. The number of successful job placements is probably, it's hard to figure exactly, but it's clearly in the order of 15,000 out of 200,000 over a period of 6 years. And then, you know, look at the so-called stimulus plan where you have little groups of 10 workers here and there around the country doing road repairs.
Building, you know, a flyover for 6 months. Yeah.
Yeah. This, what the actual need for employment of the most productive kind in the workforce is in the tens of millions. And among younger workers, it's complete. I mean, if you look at teenagers, the number of them that have entered that age of 16 to 20, potentially working, looking for work over the last 10 years is far greater than the number who have who are out of the workforce. They just haven't entered the workforce at all. And a large portion, probably two-thirds of the people 16 to 24, just haven't entered the workforce at all. So there's no official measure of unemployment that's going to touch this dimension of things and the complete inability of these job training programs to work. And yet, programs like that, helmets to hard hats, could work instantly on a very large scale.
Yeah, that's the
with a NWAPA project, series of projects underway. So it's been very interesting to see what the real need is, and not this nonsense about how we lost 7 million jobs during the recession. We've lost 25 to 30 million people from the workforce during the last 10 years. And that, and many of them pushed into working as little as 1 to 5 to 10 hours a week.
Yeah, you should stress that that's employees, a called employee,
being
employment
called
officially
sure.
in the tables.
And therefore, you know, being called in the workforce and employed and maybe working 5 or 10 hours. You know, many of those people being young people who've gone for another year and another year and another year of college or community college or graduate school, while at the same time they have a 10-hour or 15-hour a week job and they're trying to keep afloat somehow. This is tens of millions of people just in a relatively short period of time for whom the door to employment has been closed. So, and many of them, as I had looked into earlier, several million of them construction workers with the skills and the experience as construction workers. Several hundred thousand of them heavy construction and civil engineers of exactly the type of leading worker, leading engineer who will be in place everywhere along the routes of the NWAPA water management and power project building. Hundreds of thousands of those engineers lost their jobs, disappeared, their employment disappeared in the same 10-year period of time. You can go through many, many such highly skilled categories. It's a political situation has resulted, this anger in this population has resulted, which nothing can touch except proposing this kind of recovery program post-Obama with Glass-Steagall. Nothing else can touch it.
Memo, do you want to draw anything out on this, either on the principle or on specifics from the regional report that you're giving?
Yeah, I'd like to say that all throughout all three campaigns, everything that we're doing in the three campaigns is getting, just immense excitement. Just not only here in Texas, but from what I know of the organizing in San Francisco with Summer's campaign and in Boston with Rachel's campaign. Throughout the country, the kind of things that we are reporting is really exciting. We have campaign calls in which we report the kind of responses and discuss campaign issues and it's amazing just to think about all the kinds of things that are going on, and not just similar excitement to what we're doing here in Texas being found in other parts of the country. And I think, one of the points that Harley had made was recently that if you ever imagined or wondered what it looks like, then this is what a revolution looks like. And it's that kind of time we're in. We're in that kind of a period where you do have to. I mean, Lynn has been pointing this out for a while, LaRouche. That, and if people haven't read it or haven't looked at it in a while, they should really make an effort to investigate the Shelley principle, what Lynn describes as the Shelley principle, in defense of poetry by Shelley. Because it really is true that what is resonating here in the organizing, whether it's at a post office, whether it's at a tax office, whether it's at an intersection on the campus, you're beginning to see this as a real social process. There's something going on in society that, as Shelley said, makes people susceptible to profound ideas and impassioned ideas respecting man and nature. And anything practical, anything that tries to appeal to something, in a self-interest mode or fashion, it just, trying to sell or even trying to sell it like, okay, well, this is how it's going to benefit you. You're going to, this is how you'll keep your job.
This is where it comes through your town.
Yeah, right. You'll keep your house.
26 trombones.
Right. But it's got to be something beyond that. It's got to be the big questions. What is human? What is human society? What is the role of the human mind? What is it? These are the kinds of things that people are not only susceptible to, but ready and excited about having these kinds of discussions. And one of the things I should also point, it was really fun to see. One of the responses from the meeting on Thursday at the campus was an older gentleman who, after the during the Q&A, he had said, "So what you're saying about Nawapa and what you're describing as this infrastructure project, I mean, that sounds good, and that's why. So that's why we have to get Obama out. Is that right?" And we were like, "Exactly. You got the point. We don't have to." This gentleman was able to make that connection from what we were putting out there as a beautiful idea, as a beautiful future, as what the potential for what could be. And he made the connection of, okay, well, heck, we can't get there with this guy in office. Is that what you're saying? Is that why you're saying Obama needs to be removed? So he got it. And, another response we got was actually from a younger person, you know, she was, I think, a student on that campus that came by and sat down. And her question was, well, when are we going to get this thing started?
Uh-huh.
And so they're ready. I mean, the mood is in the people, it's not just that they're susceptible to, is that this is really what they're looking for. They're fired up about this. This is what people are ready to hear and discuss and be engaged in terms of not only conversations, but also committing to figuring out how can this get done? What does it take? And so we're finding that here, and then I just do want to point out that is also the case with the other campaigns, the summer campaign and Rachel Brown campaign. We're just getting a tremendous response throughout the country.
Right. Well, Paul may have something more to say or question. I have.
Well, I was just going to.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sure that obviously Memo knows all about this with the joint work down there that we've always done with the LaRouche Youth Movement in Mexico. But there's also a plan immediately underway to, and being waited for down there, to connect on the website the video tours of the part of Nuwapa that's in the United States and Canada with a similar tour into Mexico, which has itself on its drawing boards of its engineers and scientists for many years, comparable water management programs on both coasts, running up and down both coasts of Mexico and into the dry center. You know, that is essentially an integral part. And so is it to develop interactive video which connects the Nuwapa work just north of there in Alaska to the crossing of the Bering Strait. And now this, talk about Obama has to go. This week we learned that the Obama administration is trying to get the Russians into an agreement to close down development along the Bering Strait so that nothing could be done there. Except the observation of polar bears, or, you know.
It's the Heritage Park International Lockup Preserve.
Beringia,
after Bering from Copenhagen, the explorer.
But the idea being no infrastructure building, no throwing that vast bridge and tunnel from the Eurasian land bridge system to the North American rail bridges. But instead, that becomes a barrier, right? Becomes a huge reserve park, which is a barrier to any kind of human development. This is...
I think Obama's a bigger barrier.
Yes.
Well, that's what I mean. He's the one who's trying to get it declared.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the potential to get him out of the way and move that's increasing by the minute in the United States... ready to be, you know, I hope it's actualized, I you know, tomorrow. But anyway, there's also a big, it has an international component like crazy. Among the excited responses internationally is, those are coming from India, from science networks there who've known about LaRouche for decades. Lyndon LaRouche and his wife Helga LaRouche have visited there several times. And this whole news of not just Nuwapa as an idea that has been around a while, but this whole breakout, the map, the organizing that was just described by Memo and Paul, one fellow proposed the following. He said, gee, what do you think? Maybe we have a chance now. We should set up an Institute for the Nation State, an INS. In other words, instead of the Bill Gates... Global Initiative on Healthcare, Global Initiative on Agriculture, Global Initiative for International Parks to prevent any infrastructure development. So I think that just typifies the breakout in thinking that's going on, and certainly the specific breakout people should...
And he said this on Lynn's Nuwapa plan, yeah?
We should have an international institute for nation states. Mm-hmm. In other words, that's what's at stake here. And this is not just, you know, one extra large program. He got it. And, of course, the Bering Strait tunnel idea is getting which is completely integrated view in the planet, is getting much more traction coming forth. Let me ask you, Memo, you may want to say something in the closing minutes. We only have a few, but the Keisha Rogers campaign, all your work there is also coming after some years, over the 2007 to the present. But there were a lot of tours for LaRouche's call for a firewall when this whole system started coming down in 2007. And he put out the Homeowners Bank and the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. Do you have any, is there any special response just in the last recent time period from these kinds of other towns and counties or jurisdictions, or that's not something special here?
As far as I know, a lot of those towns and cities are located down south in the near the valley,
right, in the border.
Mm-hmm. And we actually were planning on getting back to them and just briefing them once again, bringing them up to date with our initiative on the NAWPA, and then just doing a little bit more research on what they could possibly maybe do some research and figure out and talk to them what kind of role they might be able to play in that. But we haven't, not as far as I know, we haven't really gotten much back from them.
Right. I'm sure that they've been, they were already in trouble. And they're part of the entire shutdown picture. So it's just a
right.
question of who's looking at the website, how many phone calls can you make? And the same thing, do you have any, you're there in Texas, which of course has been considered the center of the universe by some people. But there's a lot of agriculture, cattlemen, the cotton growers and so forth. Has there been any mustering of them, or have they, do you know of any response? I'm sure there is that, but I'm just asking.
Not yet. Mm-hmm. We're still. We do intend on doing the looking at that aspect of Texas, the farmers, a lot of cattlemen, and so forth. We haven't been able to reach those layers of the population yet, but we can. We could expect a lot of things to come from them. Also, I should clarify. I don't know if I may have not been clear, but it seemed the Pecos River is actually located in West Texas.
Yes.
And that's the region and area that the guy, the scientist or the engineer that the contact that Ian and Jason had made and spoken to. They talked to him from West Texas along the Pecos River. So I just wanted to clarify that. I don't know if I had put Pecos near the same sentence with New Mexico, but certainly in West Texas. And there's more. I mean, Texas is huge, as everyone knows, and there's a lot that can be done that we haven't tapped into yet. But you know, we're creating a lot of work for ourselves, and there's a lot to do. So there's a lot of excitement, a lot of good things to do. So.
Right.
And a lot of work for us to do out here.
And one thing is, you're part of the world that you deal with all the time is Texas and New Mexico, and then you get into Arizona, but even up northward. And a lot of the site preparation, Paul was talking about the actual installations a little while ago, the power plants, the tunnels. But, of course, certainly you need roads and railroads to even get in there, and huge
right.
barracks like the building of the town had to be done to house the people to then build
the
Hoover
Dam.
Yeah,
right.
And
right.
the my generation was the Alcan Highway. I wasn't there in 1942, but when it was about 15 years old, I saw it was built only in 1 year, 1,500 miles by the Army Corps of Engineers through the relevant route. That documentary is available too. But the site preparation, the putting up that could start next week. It wouldn't even have to wait till October, in the sense
right.
of you're going to have these geographic areas that Paul was describing, where you need just a lot of access even to then go in to start doing something. So I don't know if any of your friends that you're contacting day and night raise that. We have heard it in a lot of places. We're ready to go. The contractor and construction types. Do some of the students, you mentioned, now that was San Jacinto College, you said?
Correct, yes.
Okay, and yep. is that a university size or a...
That is, it's a smaller campus. It's located, it's in Pasadena, Texas, which okay. is home, very blue collar, a lot of industry, you know, a lot of oil refineries, factories, just, I mean, tons of it. It's all over. You see these little shops and you see a lot of the blue-collar labor workforce live. It sits in Pasadena.
Well, I think we'll have to begin and end there. I didn't realize we were out of time. I was going to pursue some of the reactions you mentioned, especially in terms of education, CCC camps. But thank you very much for this firsthand report and for Paul for this overview, both of you. So this will be the end of the LaRouche Show for August 28th, 2010. This is Marcia Mary Baker. I thank Memo, and I thank Paul.
But
Labor Day weekend, it's appropriate for full employment in Changing the Universe, September 4th. Be sure and listen to Harley Schlanger.